Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Full-blown March Madness is still 2 weeks away, but insanity grips college basketball. Allegations of corruption, bribery, FBI wiretaps, potential widespread NCAA violations, pay to play, hundreds of thousands in cash to steer recruits toward schools, a shady, opaque network of agents, coaches, shoe companies. It's the dark underworld of college athletics. This hour on Point, the NCAA, the FBI, and corruption in college basketball. You can join us on air or online. Are you shocked by the scope of this? Where do we put the blame? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first from New York City is Jeremy Wu, a writer for Sports Illustrated who covers both college and professional basketball. You can find a link to his piece headlined, "With Sean Miller in Arizona at the Center, College Hoops Scandal Hits New Level of Volatility." That's at our website, onpointradio.org. Jeremy Wu, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Good. So March Madness just around the corner, and here we are with FBI probes and criminal cases against these powerhouse college basketball teams. Here is CBS News anchor Tanya Rivero earlier this week describing the scope of this and the latest details in this huge NCAA men's basketball scandal.
College basketball is still trying to navigate what to do following a bombshell report from Yahoo detailing potential violations from some of the top teams and players in the sport over the recent years. Now the head coach of Arizona has been caught up in this scandal. FBI wiretaps intercepted telephone conversations between Arizona coach Sean Miller and Christian Dawkins, a key figure in the FBI's investigation into college basketball corruption.
So head coach of Arizona there, that's just one of many. I mean, this impacts every major conference, Hall of Fame coaches, some of the nation's most distinguished programs. Jeremy, will give us a sense of what's going on here. Summarize this scandal for us.
Absolutely. Well, it really dates back to the end of September 2017 when the FBI released documents basically revealing that, for the last year or so, they had been monitoring illegal activity. They had turned a financial advisor in the Pittsburgh area, and basically they had a couple of people undercover and basically just keeping track of illegal activity taking place. They had uncovered a bribery scheme involving assistant coaches at four high-powered college programs. Other schools were also tied up in it, one of them being Louisville, which eventually led to Rick Pitino's firing, right? And so that was sort of the first big domino that fell. And so since then, it had been sort of quiet during the season. But everybody sort of knew that the FBI was there and poking around and that this was something that, there was another shoe that was still going to drop, sort of the tip of the iceberg. And last week, documents started trickling out, sort of detailing the financial activity of this guy Christian Dawkins, who is a runner, so to speak, so sort of a go-between for the agency ASM Sports and mm-hmm. NBA agent Andy Miller. And so Dawkins was sort of named in the initial documents as sort of part of the different levels of the scandal in terms of the bribery and fraud and. Now we're sort of starting to see players being named, and that's last week.
So what's the difference here? Because this story is broad and complicated. What's the difference here between what are simply NCAA violations and what the FBI has been investigating that's actually illegal?
So it's not technically illegal to say, hey, I'm going to pay you to come to my school. That is not necessarily a crime. There are levels to that. But the aspect of it that became criminal is that there was basically a ring where money was changing hands between schools, the coaches, and agencies, and in some cases shoe companies, sort of funneling money, funneling players, sort of in a triangular sort of scheme where money changed hands, everybody profited off the players, and that's illegal. It's not expressly, against the law to just say, hey, I'm going to give you money to come play here. But then the NCAA, has the amateurism aspect that they maintain where, you know, a player's eligibility to perform and take the court for their school, you know, is sort of founded on this principle that's increasingly shaky of amateurism, where you're not being paid to play. You know, you're on scholarship, but you are not taking benefits. And so that's sort of where the line is drawn.
Here's Duke University head coach Mike Krzyzewski over the weekend addressing the corruption scandal that is plaguing college basketball.
It's a horrible time for the game, but the game has begged. It's been on its knees begging for change for years. And sometimes unless something horrible happens, you just don't change. We need to change.
So, Jeremy Wu, the biggest allegations, as you mentioned, centered on a couple of schools, University of Arizona, University of Louisville. But there are other allegations at other schools, North Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State. Yahoo Sports reports that there was preferential treatment, so-called impermissible benefits going on at these places. Some of the biggest names in college basketball. Talk about that in this spectrum of violations that you talk about in your piece.
So what Yahoo reported, basically they obtained a financial document as it pertained to Christian Dawkins and ASM Sports. And basically it was an expense report and their spreadsheets. And so what we've seen now publicly, you know, is players being named. You know, this is not necessarily happening with the school's knowledge, but it's the agent, you know, paying the player or, you know, delivering money in some way, shape, or form, whether it's paying for a plane ticket or buying a meal. In some cases, you know, just delivering money. Like large sums of money. So it really depends. And so when I say spectrum, it just, you know, there's obviously a difference between taking $10,000 to maybe go be represented by this person or $50 to, you know, go to dinner with the agent. So, you know, it really depends. And that's the thing that's been tricky with, you know, what we do have, what has come out is that, you know, we have these price numbers and we have the names, but we don't have the receipts and we don't have, you know, the exact details that would really point to the nature of all of these transactions.
Still waiting
so
for
I
more.
Think, and so we're seeing these players get cleared to play quickly, which is interesting. But you know, it points to the fact that there is more to it, and it's more than just saying, "Hey, he took money." Like there, you have to look at the whole picture.
Perhaps much more, and just the tip of the iceberg here. Let me bring in another voice from Henderson, Nevada. Ed O'Bannon, a former college NBA and international player. He won a national championship with UCLA in 1995 and sued the NCAA in 2009. He won that case over its use of student-athlete images in video games. His new book is Court Justice, the inside story of my battle against the NCAA. Ed O'Bannon, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Jay.
So what do you make of this scandal currently enveloping the sport?
Well, it's, I think, like Coach K said, our sport has been on its knees begging for change. And this is a glaring instance. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we're here. But at the same time, I feel like it's a great opportunity to introduce some new rules and revamp the rules that we have.
So you're a former Division I basketball player, national champion for basketball powerhouse at UCLA. To your mind, has this always gone on behind the scenes? Has it been getting worse? How do you see it? What's your view?
Yes, I believe that it's been going on for years. Really kind of since the beginning of time, as far as this sport is concerned. And I think through my years, it was going on. There were always rumors of people getting paid, players getting paid, and things like that, things going under the table. But I think, again, this is an opportunity for us to recognize that you know, the players are almost kind of crying out in a roundabout way and saying, you know, we want, you know, better benefits for each other, for our game.
So where do you place the blame in all this, Ed O'Bannon? Is it coaches? Is it schools? Is it the NCAA? I mean, you talk about the opportunity for change, but where does the responsibility lie for the actions in the first place?
Well, I believe it's with the NC2A. I think they're the ones that make up these rules. They're the ones that enforce them. They've been in place for decades. I've said before, The game has changed. The rules inside the game has changed. The money has grown in tremendous bounds. Yeah, everything has changed except for the rules that govern the the game. So if those change, maybe we won't have situations like Louisville as well as Arizona.
So, Jeremy Wu, is it time to revise the rules of the NCAA? You heard Ed O'Bannon there, in more in favor of these student athletes?
I think so. I think, and the one thing I think has been sort of pleasantly refreshing about a lot of the coverage is that, you know, people are not heaping blame on the kids because it's not their fault. Like, ultimately, sort of like Ed said, I mean, you know, they are victims of this system. It's been going on for a long time. You know, anytime you take away the element of currency, you create this black market. It's a high functioning one. You know, it's been going on for so long. It works well. You know, whether or not that's a good thing or not is a different question, morality question. But,
what's been the NCAA's response so far? How have they reacted to all this?
I mean, they've been alarmingly quiet. And, like, the thing that sort of stuns me, and I know they have to put a good face on it, but it's just, it's funny, you know, from as someone who sort of had the ear to the ground and, you know, people who are around basketball and work in the industry, everyone knows this is happening. So the NCAA has sort of put out these sort of tone-deaf responses with shock. You know, it's just sort of amusing because I think ultimately they are the ones who have to, you know, change the framework here.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and ponderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. That music means March Madness, CBS coverage of college basketball. The big tournament is coming. We're talking about the NCAA in the context of the FBI's big investigation into corruption in college basketball. And you can join the conversation this hour. Should we start paying student players? Would that solve these problems? What are the racial undertones in all this? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're speaking this hour with Sports Illustrated writer Jeremy Wu and Ed O'Bannon, a star at UCLA, won the national championship there in the 1990s. He's out with a new book, Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. And joining me now from New York City is Jason Gay, sports columnist for The Wall Street Journal. You can find a link to his piece headlined, Secret Cash Isn't an NCAA Scandal, Amateurism Is. That's at our website, onpointradio.org. Jason Gay, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
So what do you see in all this? Quite a story here over the years.
Yeah, I mean, not to sound like a sports columnist from the Wall Street Journal, but this is what happens when you shut off a valve of a free market economy. I mean, this is as simple as that. You look at what has been happening, what the FBI has revealed here, what the stories in Yahoo and ESPN have detailed. You know, these are basically, you know, parts of the market that have leaked out because these players have value and they are saying, you know, with this information, what a lot of people have been saying for a great many years, that college athletes in high revenue sports, college men's basketball, college football, have a great deal of value to what is now a multi-billion dollar system in which every party, the schools, the conferences, the NCAA, and the coaches, of course, profit, except for the athletes.
Here is Syracuse University head basketball coach Jim Boeheim telling reporters on Saturday he is surprised by how involved coaches have been in this latest scandal.
The thing that ruins everything for me is when coaches get involved in this. There's no understanding of that. There's just, I mean, I think it goes back to the old thing, well, somebody's going to do it, so I'll do it, you know, and I hope that isn't the case. I don't think it is. The problem with this case, and when that happens, then, well, everybody's doing it.
That's Jim Boeheim there. And then back in October, ESPN's Jay Billis spoke with former University of Louisville head coach Rick Pitino shortly after he was fired by the school during an investigation into whether a shoe company paid the family of a recruit to play for the Cardinals.
Do you feel comfortable that you will be clear of any charge coming your way in the future?
1,000%. Because I know the truth. And like I tell my players, I'm not going to. The one thing you don't want to do is ever mislead the FBI or the U.S. attorney. You don't want to do that. You got bigger problems if you do that. You better tell the truth.
So, Jason Gay, you talk about a multi-billion dollar web here, colleges, players. Talk about the coaches. There are two of them. What do you want to see from them? What's their responsibility in all this?
The responsibility is for reform of the system. And let me just say that the guilt or innocence of any individual coach here is kind of immaterial to the existential question, which is whether or not college athletes are entitled to share in the revenues that they create in college sports. We have still a prevailing attitude that college sports is this place of amateurism, and that athletes are compensated with 4-year scholarships. And that's just sort of a sham. There's no other circumstance in which a scholarship student at a university is precluded from profiting off their talent. Let me give you an example. If you're a music scholarship candidate at a school, go out and play a violin concerto on the weekend. There's no rule that says that you can't collect money for playing. Mm-hmm. College athletes are the only people who are held to that standard. Why is it? It's because of imagery. It's the idea that these are students, that these people are amateurs, and when they cut down those nets at the end of March, that you're watching something pristine when the truth is anything but.
Our listeners are very engaged in this conversation. Let me get one in here, Craig in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Craig. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
Through the whole scandal thing, I just think that they should pay the players because clearly just off of the scholarship of, the education room and all that, it's not enough. And they clearly need money. And for how much they make the university millions, the coach gets paid millions, and they don't see any of that, I just think that's wrong. And then, for one example, the University of Central Florida kicker, he had a YouTube page, and he's making money off of it, and the team gave him an option to either shut it down or to get kicked off the team, and ultimately he got kicked off the team. And I just, I think a lot of the players that go, in my opinion, they're not really going for the education. They're going to play the sport. Mm-hmm. And I think they should get paid for it.
Greg, thank you. Here's Mike in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, with another perspective. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
My comment is I disagree with them paying the athletes. We actually do pay them. We give them a scholarship, $250,000 with an opportunity to become an educated person to better themselves. We're only talking about a small percentage of the players that are actually getting paid. The average student, the core of the basketball program, they're not getting paid. They're not in the Middle East scandals. So once we do start paying them, then all of a sudden we have to decide, well, how much is each one of them worth?
Mm-hmm.
Again, if they're worth so much money, they have the opportunity to go to the NBA. Go to the NBA and get an education later. But don't just muddle the water and stuff by saying it is a business. It's always been a business.
Mike, thank you. Jason Gay, two different sides of the perspective there. You have said that amateurism is a mechanism that the NCAA uses to preclude one party from sharing in all these profits, in these billion-dollar profits. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, more specifically, let's go back to Taylor Branch's, rather seminal piece of, I guess, maybe half dozen years ago about the sham of college athletes and the idea of what a student athlete is in the 21st century. Student athletes was a mechanism created for liability reasons to absolve universities from workmen's compensation responsibilities in the event of, player injury or incapacitation. So the whole idea of what these guys mythologically are was a legal construct. And same goes for amateurism. I mean, we had the same conversation a generation ago about the Olympics, the idea that, if we were to allow Olympians to collect appearance fees or, God forbid, have Nike sponsor them, it would somehow make the Olympics less of a thing. That's clearly proven not to be true.
Teresa writes on Twitter, I'm glad you're doing the show. I was at UCLA in its hoops heyday. I was a teaching assistant. I felt pressured to give passing grades to players. 40 years later, actual money further dirties the NCAA and harms the players. Ed O'Bannon, you're a UCLA alum. Chime in here. What do you think about amateurism and paying these players?
Yes, amateurism is a sham. It's old news. It's outdated. I think that the players deserve to get paid. Like everyone has said, you know, they're bringing in multi-million dollars a year, up to billions of dollars in contracts, television contracts, and whatnot. They deserve a piece of the pie. Just like the caller mentioned, the one kid that had the YouTube video. You know, he had to choose, and he chose his likeness over a scholarship. I think that's admirable. And you know, there's enough money, I think, and we talk about these things in my book. There's a call to action. There's 12 steps. The first one, I use him as an example, actually. So I'm in favor of athletes getting paid. They deserve it. They deserve their likeness. You're born with it. You die with it. You should own it. I know we started our lawsuit at the beginning. It was primarily for former athletes at least being able to control their likeness. But once you sign that contract at 17 years old, 18 years old, you give up your likeness forever in perpetuity, and that's unfortunate.
John from Facebook says, you should pay these athletes. It's silly. FBI wiretaps over college sports? Really? Ray in Vermont says, there's a ton of money at stake with these big-time college sports, so is it really any surprise that people are breaking the rules and gaming the system in an attempt to secure the best talent and win titles? Jason Gay, it does remain controversial paying these players. Does that mean that colleges would have to reclassify athletes as employees? I mean, it gets complicated, doesn't it?
It does get complicated. And, you know, hard is not a reason to not do it, though, however. I think the quickest fix, and this isn't an entire fix to the solution, an entire solution to the problem, is the proposal that's out there to eliminate rules and regulations against athletes profiting off their likeness, signing autographs, signing sponsorships with, you know, apparel companies, shoe companies, if they want to take a second job, if they want to work for, you know, ESPN in the summertime. All these things are currently prohibited. Eliminate the regulations against that. But don't just eliminate it for men's college basketball and football. Eliminate it for everybody. If you have a swimmer out there, Katie Ledecky, you know, who is capable of doing all that stuff, like, absolutely, they should be encouraged and entitled to do that. And so that way you sort of create a sweeping change across all of college sports. Then once you get into, you know, whether or not you're going to be paying the individual college athletes in the high revenue sports, you know, you have conversations like, okay, let's just make this thing a free market and let the fur fly. You know, wherever the money needs to go, it'll go. That means you're competitively bidding for athletes, which I know probably make a lot of people's hair curl. More conservatively, there are ideas about player stipends, you know, escrow accounts that are you know, given to the athlete upon graduation. You know, there are a number of issues that are out there and a number of different strategies out there. And then these things are also entangled in the courts. There's a case right now involving the lawyer Jeffrey Kessler and a former Clemson quarterback named Malcolm Jenkins. And this is about whether or not it's legal for the NCAA to restrict wages at a scholarship. Mm. You know, whether or not that they are that a scholarship is a unfair cap on wages. So that's currently in the system, and that could be a revolutionary decision depending on which way that goes.
Here's Steve Kerr, the head coach of the NBA's Golden State Warriors, speaking on Saturday, saying that the NCAA needs reform. This is after a reporter asked him about the scandal that's hit his alma mater, the University of Arizona.
The NCAA needs reform for sure, and it's not just, you know, my reaction based on the news from yesterday. It's needed reform for many years. I don't think the NCAA needs to pay the athletes, but I think what the NCAA needs to do is allow the athletes to make some money if they're able to do so off the floor.
Back to the phones. Here's James in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hey. Hi. My point is that for every one of these athletes that we're paying or they want to pay these large sums of money, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of kids out there from all walks of life that could fit the bill and play that sport, maybe not at that level, but that would love to have an education. So how do you clean that up and hold universities accountable, possibly by saying, look, when you bring someone in on a scholarship, if they don't stay 4 years, you lose that scholarship for the remaining of those 4 years. That would give the schools incentive to find people that actually want to attend school, want the education. I guess that's my point.
James, thank you. Jeremy, we'll jump back in here. Talk about some of the solutions. There's one from James in Charlotte.
I think when we're talking about sort of the college basketball infrastructural issues, I mean, I think you can look to – and there's been a lot of talk about this. You can also look to the NBA as a place where you can start. Now, like, to be clear, there's no like – necessarily like moral weight on the NBA to do this. But I think there is an element where, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the one and done rule. You know, you have to be 19. You know, unless you're an international player, you have to be 19 and 1 year removed from college in order to enter the draft. Or your 19th birthday has to be in the calendar year of the draft, to be specific. So what that does is it creates, you know, this environment where the best players every year in high school who, you know, most of them do have the talent level where if they could go straight to the draft, they would be drafted, some of them pretty high, right? And so those kids are the ones who command the most money on, you know, the college black market because they are the best players, right? So if you can say, you know, I think the NBA is moving towards some type of change in the next 2 to 3 years from what I've been told. Mm-hmm. But if you say, even if you go to what has been talked about, which is like 2 years minimum, or you can go straight, I think that something like that, some type of solution there, at least eliminates the problem where some of these kids can, if you're good enough to collect on your likeness right away and perform at a high level, you can go do that.
So Ed O'Bannon, the goal for so many of these players is to make it to the pros. You've done it. You've been there. Is the league, the NBA, culpable in some way for dangling a very enticing carrot in front of these college kids?
I guess so. If you want to look at it that way, but at the same time, as a player, as an athlete, you set goals, and you know, your goal ultimately is to get to the NBA. For most players, for most athletes, some athletes use that opportunity to go to school and go to class. Not everyone is built the same. Not everybody comes from the same background or has the same goals. But one thing I will say is your scholarships are 1 year. They're not 4 years. And every year you have to renew it. So when you get that opportunity to perform, you do it obviously to the best of your ability. But if your coach doesn't like you or has a different player in mind, they can drop you at the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. I know my daughter went through that. She was was on scholarship, basketball scholarship, and had it taken away because for whatever reason. So it's not a 4-year thing. But yeah, absolutely. Players, their ultimate goal is to get to the NBA, and if that carrot is there, you go for it.
You're going to do it. Jason Gay, just about 30 seconds before the break here, you've written about the fact that the public views college sports through a lens of nostalgia that has no bearing on the reality of what's going on in real life. Explain to us what you mean about that.
Yeah, just this, you know, the idea of, you know, college students who are, you know, playing in March Madness by night and running around campus by day. These are effectively professionalized conferences now. I mean, the pressure that's on them media-wise in terms of, you know, attention and all the kinds of things that are out there, it's quite a different world now than it was a few generations ago.
Before we get back to the show, we'd like to ask you about you. That's right. We want to learn more about our listeners with a short survey. It's anonymous and easy. Just go to wbur.org/survey to complete the survey right now. That's wbur.org/survey. This survey will be tremendously helpful to us. So thanks.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about college basketball's huge corruption scandal this hour, and you can join the conversation. Does the NBA hold some responsibility here? Are schools too dependent on the billions of dollars they receive from winning basketball teams? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm speaking this hour with Wall Street Journal's sports columnist Jason Gay, Sports Illustrated basketball writer Jeremy Wu, and former college basketball star Ed O'Bannon. Here's Stan Van Gundy, the head coach of the NBA's Detroit Pistons, speaking on Sunday, talking about racism, that racism is an underlying theme for people who take issue with players coming to the NBA straight out of high school.
I've never heard anybody like go up in arms about, oh my God, they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league baseball, or they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league hockey. They're not making big money. And they're white kids primarily, and nobody has a problem. But all of a sudden now, you've got a black kid that wants to come out of high school and make millions. That's a bad decision. But bypassing college to go play for $800 a month in minor league baseball, that's a fine decision? What the hell is going on?
Ed O'Bannon, your former player at the big leagues, what are your thoughts as to the racial undertones here? Are African-American players unfairly targeted by these agents, by these boosters, by these shoe companies? And what about Stan Van Gundy there?
Well, you know what? It's hard to argue. I have to be honest. I think there are racial undertones. I mean, you look at the two sports, and he's exactly right. When you come out of high school, you can get an agent. If you're going to the baseball or hockey route, you can get an agent. And we also talk about this in the book, ironically. But you can get an agent. You can get check your draft status. You can even get drafted. If you don't like your draft status, you can go back to college, and it would actually be paid for. And football and basketball, the exact opposite is the case. You can't get an agent. If you do, you are committed to the professional level, and you can't come back to college, let alone get drafted. So, yes, and they are the two money-making sports. And I think the obvious racial tone in all of this is basketball and football primarily are black athletes.
Right. Jason Gay, college football, college basketball, typically dominated by African Americans, as Ed O'Bannon says. Just a coincidence, or is there an element of racism injected here?
I think there absolutely is. And I also think that the discussion of whether or not this is about athletes who are going to turn pro is kind of a red herring here. Every athlete who is playing in a high-revenue college sport is entitled to share in that economy. It doesn't matter if they're going to be a top 10 pick or not. They're still part of a multi-billion-dollar marketplace. Let's be very specific about college basketball for a second. The television contract for Turner and CBS this year for March Madness, 3 weeks of basketball fun, is a $1 billion per year deal. That is a massive amount. I think part of what's happening here, Jane, is that we're living in an information world now. There's just too much information out there. People understand. They see the figures. They get it. The hypocrisy that's out there that might have been able to be cloaked in fancy language in the past, you can't do that anymore. People know too much. And these FBI leaks are just yet another example of that.
Jeremy Wu, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think there is an aspect, and, you know, we've sort of hit on the salient points. It's like, yeah, I think Van Gundy said it really well. I mean, no one is really mad about these kids going to play baseball, right? It's like when you do see, you know, these black kids a lot of the time coming from underserved communities where they need, you know, need and can use this money to help their families. It's like, you know, that aspect of it. And then also, you know, being able to make millions of dollars, you know, in the future. I mean, I think there is, whether people like to admit it or not, I think in a lot of places there is sort of a subtle pushback on that, and it's sort of hard to deny.
Let's go up to Bangor, Maine. Marisa has been waiting on the line. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point, Marisa.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
All right. The point that I would like to make is that it's clear that there are racial undertones here, and also it's very clear that the system is broken. And I think it's great that the scandal has gotten out, because now these players can get what they deserve. Because of the NBA's age limit at 19, they're forced to go to college. So when you have these young black kids who are coming from poverty, of course, they have no choice but to take part in these deals that shouldn't be illegal but are, and try to make some money for themselves or support their families.
Mm-hmm.
I think the NBA should lower the age limit back to 18, and the NCAA has got a lot to work out.
Marissa, thank you very much. Let me get this in here. This is one former Louisville recruit, Brian Bowen, speaking with ESPN's Jeff Goodman. Bowen is now at the University of South Carolina. He was asked about the FBI's allegations that two former Adidas employees and sports agent runner Christian Dawkins gave money to his family. Bowen was dismissed from Louisville, but likely will not be able to play for South Carolina until next year.
What did you know about this?
I didn't know anything at all. The same way the whole media found out is the same way I found out.
Who do you blame for the position you're in right now?
There's not one specific person I could say I could blame. Just greedy adults as a whole. Really just the greedy adults.
Makes me sad to listen to that, Jason Gay. Greedy adults all around these kids.
Yeah, greedy adults is exactly right. And can we just quit the whole idea of, like, you know, jumping on these athletes for, you know, accepting basically low-level payments to secure their services? I mean, the numbers that are in these cases are stunningly low. We're talking about five-figure, four-figure. We're talking about lunches, dinners. When you consider the net value an athlete might be able to create for a university, even in just one season, if these figures are to be believed, they're vastly underpaid. And again, it just sort of speaks to the overall issue here, which is that this is an economy that needs to be liberated.
Here's some listener feedback from Twitter. One listener says, professional sports are using college teams as feed teams, and everyone's making money, tons of money, except the players who risk injury to play. It's indentured servitude, and these players need to be compensated. Alyssa writes, a player was suspended once because his coach gave him a little money to go home to a funeral. The level to which we regulate this is extreme and harmful. And Chris from our website, football and basketball need established minor league and junior development systems like the ones that exist in baseball and hockey. Jason Gay, would that work?
Yeah, I do believe the NBA has a responsibility here to step in and to create some sort of system in which, you know, high school athletes who have no interest in going into college can, you know, go into either professional leagues or a developmental league. They have an existing league. It's called the G League. It's their developmental league. They can expand that. I think we'll see within a generation a system that's not terribly far away from what professional soccer has, where you have development academies in which players, you know, get ready for the idea of 13, 14-year-old prospects signing on with a developmental academy, and you have that person in the system for a long period of time. Can I ask Ed a question, though?
Sure.
I'm very curious to ask. Because of call to action, I mean, you know, fingers crossed that the NCAA or coaches or conferences will ever get the ball rolling on reform. But some people have suggested a player strike, a walkout, a boycott, a Final Four team sitting in the locker room and declining to come out would be the seismic moment that this debate needs. I think it's a sort of an unfair burden to put on athletes who are probably psyched to be playing in Final Four basketball, but curious if you think that there's a potential for that kind of moment.
Great question, and that's one that I've wrestled with for years. I've been saying this for a long time that I feel like there's going to come a time when athletes educate themselves and they really kind of just say, you know what, enough is enough. And then they boycott. I think you're absolutely right. That's a huge burden to put on young adults like that when the world is watching. I don't know that it'll get that far. I think with the threat of it happening might hopefully be enough. But I think other people will step in and hopefully some of these greedy adults, like the kids said, they will step in and say, look, let's not have these young adults make a decision like this because it will carry this decision for the rest of their lives. And so a lot of people won't like them. When you go against the grain like that, it can turn on you for the rest of your life. So I hope it doesn't get to that People are talking about it now, but it can get there. But let's hope it doesn't, because that's an incredible burden for the kids to carry.
Ed O'Bannon, thank you. Great question, Jason. Let's go to Tara in Spokane, Washington. Hi, Tara. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I was employed by my college while I was a college student in a work-study program as Associated Student Body Secretary, and I received a reasonable wage for what I did.
Okay.
And I'm really curious why college athletes couldn't also receive key point reasonable wages for what they're doing, as calling it work study, what have you. Why is this millions or nothing?
Mm-hmm. Tara, thank you. Why don't we ratchet this down a little bit, Jason Gay? Make it more reasonable, to Tara's point.
I like that. I mean, you know, take the volume down. What she raises is a fundamental hypocrisy here, that they're not selling an image of the, you know, work-study student. They're selling an image of this pristine student-athlete, and that's, you know, where this issue comes into conflict. Just a quick thing. I misspoke earlier that Martin Jenkins, who's with the Jeffrey Kessler case, he was a defensive back at Clemson. But I feel like, you know, toning things down and being reasonable, I think all parties need to come to the table and be reasonable.
Tara, thank you. Here's Dan in Hampton, Virginia. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm a 71 graduate of UNC Chapel Hill, had the pleasure of being a music major, trombonist, went to two Final Fours, and loved basketball and I've been following it ever since. I wanted to correct a misunderstanding that seems to be perpetuating even during this program, which is that athletes aren't being paid. The problem is that athletes are being paid, and they're being paid in a poorly regulated or totally unregulated manner, and that's why people are coming up on charges. You know, it seems to me it's similar to the legalization of marijuana in many states, because those states believed and those voters believed that it would be better to have regulations that are effective and benefit the entire game instead of keeping it under the table.
Dan, thank you. Appreciate your call there from Hampton. Here's Clay in Jackson, Mississippi. Hi, Clay. You're on the air.
Hey, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I wanted to say I go on both sides of the aisle. I flip back and forth on my stance on this topic. But one thing that I think both sides of the aisle could agree on would be that if we allowed the players to be played, if they were allowed to make money off of their likeness, if they were allowed to make money off of their good reputation, I would see to where the players would be incentivized to behave and to act accordingly to their best interest. Off the courts, if their bad behavior affected the finances or their ability to make money. So I see a very big positive, and that's usually the issue that swings me back to players being able to make money.
Clay, thank you. Let's get Dylan in here from New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Jane. I was just calling to say, you know, out in New Orleans, LSU football makes more money than the Saints probably do, and these kids are putting in more time and practicing games than most full-time adults at a job, and anyone who goes to college nowadays knows it's hard to pay for it. It's hard to make these expenses and also be able to get your studies done. And I think these kids need to get paid. They need to see some end just to make them know that, you know, the world is a profitable place, especially, and they can't be getting taken advantage of this like this anymore.
Dylan, thank you. Ed O'Bannon, we've got a couple of minutes left here. What does change look like to you briefly? What do you want to see in the NCAA?
Well, I would like them to open the line of communication. And we talk, once again, to finish up my book, we talk about the players getting a seat at the table and really just kind of hashing things out with the NC2A, going over their wants, their needs, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they can get on the same page. In a perfect world, in my perfect world, that's at least where we began.
Jeremy Wu, what do you think? Last word here from you. What does change look like?
I think it's just moving towards, you know, getting back to sort of a situation where the players can operate on some level of a free market. Like, this, you know, whether or not that causes more problems, I think fundamentally it's just at least putting it in a place where everything is more in the open where it's clear, and also where people can advocate for players, like, and they can advocate for themselves. Like right now, you know, that's the other thing, is there's not really a piece. The NCAA doesn't have anything in place where it's, there's no players association. There's not a consistent, you know, advocate for these kids. Yeah. So we got to help the kids.
Jason Gay, you wrote in the Wall Street Journal, quote, "The worst thing that could happen here is what always happens. Penalties are handed out. We moralize at the offenders, forget about it, go back to burnishing the image of coaches and programs, and then repeat the whole dance when the same shenanigans happen somewhere else." Wrap us up here. If the system is broken, what would a solution look like?
Fairness. You know, fairness in terms of bringing, as Ed says, bringing everybody to the table, making sure that athletes, student athletes have full representation, making sure that, you know, there is some sort of compensation plan that suits all parties. And I want to reassure here, I believe that college sports will still be the thing that people love, that March Madness can still be an incredibly satisfying bit of theater, because the games are great. The athletes are great. We're just talking about fairness within the multi-billion-dollar economy of it.
Really interesting conversation and a great, great panel today. Ed O'Bannon, former college and professional basketball player, author of the new book Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. Great to have you, Ed. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Jason Gay, Wall Street Journal sports columnist. Really appreciate your time and your reporting, Jason. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Jeremy Wu, Sports Illustrated basketball writer. Glad to have you with us, Jeremy. Thanks.
Thanks, Jane.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Be the first to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page. Hit the like button and you'll get alerts on upcoming shows right there in your newsfeed. On Point is produced by Brian Amaral, Brian Hardzinski, Alina Mata, Stefano Cassonis, Sarah Platt, Allison Poley, Tanya Raleigh, and James Ross. We get help from Gretchen Voss, Catherine Proctor, and Anna Bauman. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.